This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Learn about a new ethics reform proposal from Illinois Senate Republicans that allows state's attorneys, not just judges, to have wiretap authority.
It's very limited in nature. It limits them to, you know, a certain amount of time to be able to do that.
State Senator Jason Berrickman of Bloomington tells you why the idea won't get into constitutional trouble. Plus, a fight over masks and bars de-escalates. Bloomington Liquor Commissioner and Mayor Terry Renner tells why. The pandemic and stressed-out irritation go hand in hand. Hear how to resist flaring. And Illinois Wesleyan University explains a new mental health initiative for student-athletes. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from WGLT listeners. Join the community of informed news consumers who listen to WGLT and also support it financially. Learn more about how you can support WGLT's nonprofit public service mission at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is calling on House Speaker Michael Madigan to testify in a legislative corruption inquiry. Madigan has declined the invitation to answer questions before a panel of state lawmakers investigating his connections to the ComEd bribery scandal. Pritzker says the public deserves to hear from the speaker.
I strongly believe that the speaker should take any opportunity, and this is one, to present answers to the questions that I think, you know, all of us have.
Madigan faces no criminal charges and says he will not testify so as to not interfere with a federal criminal investigation. The House panel is debating whether it should subpoena Madigan and other witnesses who refuse to testify. McLean County's total of active coronavirus cases has dropped for the fourth straight day. The county's three new cases are the fewest in one day since mid-August. The McLean County Health Department says five more patients have recovered. Nine patients are hospitalized, including one in intensive care. The county's testing positivity rate over the last week dropped to 2.4%. Mothers Against Drunk Driving says research done by State Farm shows driving under the influence of cannabis is a big problem. The survey finds one in eight adults admits to having driven under the influence of marijuana. National MAD President Helen Witte says a lot of beliefs people have about marijuana use are just not so.
For example, like the, it's not dangerous to drive. I drive better after I've been taking cannabis. And that is so dangerous because innocent people are being killed and families are being shattered.
Witte says there is not much research on cannabis-impaired driving, particularly in Illinois, which legalized the substance for recreational use at the start of the year. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Senate Republicans have introduced a legislative ethics reform package. Joining us to talk about that and other issues is State Senator Jason Berrickman, who represents part of Bloomington Normal. Among other things, the several bills would provide state's attorneys with wiretap authority. Is there an erosion of constitutional checks and balances to taking that authorizing function away from judges?
No, I think this is an appropriate tool, both under the Constitution and, importantly, it's a necessary tool. I think it allows us, you know, it's long been debated, this issue, but it's a tool that would allow those in law enforcement, state's attorneys, to be able to gather information necessary to pursue their investigations. Certainly appropriate.
What is the problem it's fixing? Why can't prosecutors go through judges now and get that done?
Well, it could be any number of things, including the procedures of going to the court. There can be delays that occur to the courts. There can be, other logistical type things that inhibit those state's attorneys from proceeding and gathering that type of information, evidence.
Courts have generally held wiretap orders to be the province of the courts. This has extended to the electronic era, where law enforcement has needed court authority to get into cell phone records and GPS data from phones. It's an area where the late Justice Antonin Scalia was quite vocal. How will this legislation avoid potential unreasonable search issues?
Well, the proposal is limited to certain offenses that may have been committed, and requires the state's attorney, you know, to meet those burdens, that they're only pursuing this on those qualified offenses. It's very limited in nature. It limits them to, you know, a certain amount of time to be able to do that. And the goal here is to give to the state's attorneys this tool, but limit it and say, look, you can only use it in certain instances as qualified offenses. You can only use it for a certain amount of time. The amount of time subject to, you know, when you're able to actually go before the courts, all in which is designed to limit this to those areas where it's necessary.
Another measure would allow the Attorney General's office to impanel a statewide grand jury to investigate and prosecute bribery and misconduct by lawmakers. How is that better than existing investigative options?
Well, this has long been one of the concerns that have existed in Illinois. Many of our attorney generals and candidates for attorney general have pointed out the fact that they really lack, although the public perceives the, you know, the state's top lawyer as being someone who should be able to conduct certain criminal investigations, candidates for attorney general and the attorney generals themselves have pointed out that they do not have the tools that would be necessary for them to pursue things like this. So a statewide grand jury would allow an attorney general who would have jurisdiction far beyond the limited county jurisdiction that a state's attorney has here. Again, we're talking about this in the context of bribery, misconduct by members of the General Assembly. Those things could exist in a member's legislative district, which could be multiple counties. It could exist somewhere else in the state if the member were traveling. We saw some of those things occurring under the members who've now since resigned, but we had members who were out meeting with other people where there was discussion of bribery and things of that nature. The point here, Charlie, is that the state attorney general would have jurisdiction over the entire state, not be limited to actions that occurred in one specific county.
Senate Bill 4014 would also give the legislative inspector general authority to investigate lawmakers without first getting permission from the Legislative Ethics Commission, which is comprised by lawmakers. Is this dog gonna hunt? I mean, lawmakers have typically carved out oversight of lawmakers for themselves in terms of the Open Meetings Act, in terms of the Freedom of Information Act, in terms of the Legislative Ethics Commission. How are they going to be willing to give up this authority?
Well, I think this is an area where the public, it helps when the public weighs in, and the public's obviously, I think, fed up with the lack of integrity that seemingly exists in our state's public officials. This is an area where, you know, under current law, the fox is guarding the hen house. And we can do something about this. The current legislative inspector general, previous legislative inspector generals, have asked for more independence from the legislature. I think it's totally appropriate that be done. I think that not only given the current news, but given Illinois' long history of public corruption, if we're going to be serious about regulating ourselves, part of what we have to do is relinquish control over that oversight and that regulation. The legislative inspector general is designed to be a person of high integrity. I think we have to trust that person to use the proper judgment in determining whether there's been conduct by sitting lawmakers that warrants some type of action.
That bill would also make the commission all members of the public rather than the General Assembly. But the appointees would still owe their positions to the General Assembly. So while you have a shot at independence, it's not a guaranteed thing there.
Well, there's no perfect system, I think, that could ever exist. So what we're trying to do is move the ball in the right direction.
State Senator Jason Berrickman is a Republican from Bloomington Normal. We talk with Senator Berrickman about once a month on Sound Ideas. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie. Always good to talk to you.
I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's Public Media. A potentially litigious collision between the city of Bloomington and a bar that failed to enforce the state's COVID safety rules has de-escalated. The owner of Cadillac Jack's reportedly hired an attorney known for suing governments in opposition to those rules. That didn't happen in Bloomington. Cadillac Jack's recently agreed to pay $1,500 in fines to settle three violations from the Labor Day weekend. The bar was accused of not enforcing mask rules. Ryan Denham spoke to Mayor Terry Renner about the case, as well as Monday night city council meeting.
It was a first offense. We kind of went back and forth, and we didn't really have, I didn't have as a liquor commissioner, any clear precedent for the types of fines to administer. But we did want to make it clear, I want to make it clear, that we do take this seriously, and we want to make sure that all proprietors are moving forward and trying to achieve compliance. We have several other complaints or allegations that the police have filed that I'll be dealing with in the next couple of weeks. Every single one of those, however, had immediate compliance. They may just be people that I asked to come in to bring into the Liquor Commission to try to stress the importance of complying with our COVID restrictions and to protect public safety.
So there were three other establishments that were found to be in violation over Labor Day weekend, but so they all complied, though, after their first kind of run-in with the police?
Right. And our intention, of course, here, my intention is, as mayor and liquor commissioner, is not to impose fines for the sake of imposing fines, but to say, you know, if you've had three situations and there were some incidents of non-compliance, and it took a while. Ultimately, there was compliance by the time there was the third count. But we do want to make sure that when we send police officers out to enforce the laws, that it's not just a slap on the wrist or a reminder. We want to remind people, but if there's a consistent series of problems, more than just once, and then you immediately comply, for example, then there has to be some kind of fine. There has to be some kind of consequence. Or people aren't proprietors or even patrons. They're not going to take us seriously.
So there's a separate but related question about restaurants. So back in the spring and the summer, the city went out of its way to help set up kind of outdoor dining spaces, especially in downtown Bloomington, so that restaurants, could have a chance to survive, basically, make it easier for patrons to go and actually have a bite to eat and sit outside. As they say on Game of Thrones, though, winter is coming. What is the city going to be doing to help restaurants now that outdoor dining is going to be less of an option simply because of the weather?
Well, actually, we're Melissa Hahn, the director of our Economic Community Development department, is certainly working with many of the businesses, and we want businesses to tell us what they need. Do you have any ideas for how we move forward? And that's what worked this past summer. There are different kinds of challenges now that the weather is going to be cold. So we will certainly, all options should be on the table at this point, as long as we're protecting public safety.
Halloween is a month away. Have you made any decisions about trick-or-treating?
There's a lot of discussion about this, to say the least. Some of the difficulties are people who are going door-to-door, mostly are children or teenagers, whatever. They're going to be people who already have masks on some ways, right? But it's not the mask issue as much as the number of people who are going to be congregating together. We're looking toward some guidance from the Illinois Department of Public Health, and so I hate it that there may be a dramatically reduced Halloween. I don't know what ultimately, the council seems to have been preferring for us to do alternative Halloween kinds of events. I don't know ultimately what we're going to work out. We've only got a month, though. You know, I'll be talking to the city manager, and we'll be working this out. The council, I think, is interested in deferring to the Illinois Department of Public Health.
And I assume whatever you do, you want to be in sync with the town of Normal next door?
Absolutely. Yeah, and now that are people still going to go door-to-door if we say, you know, we would like to have alternative means? But we're not going to go and start issuing tickets for people who go door-to-door. It's just it certainly is not something that we're going to be sanctioning officially.
So the city council on Monday night discussed but didn't ultimately vote on a plan to create a new public arts commission. They're essentially going to sort out some details here over the next several weeks and then bring it back for a vote in late October. What do you think of the idea of creating this commission?
I'm very happy about that, and I think it's a major step forward for us. I mean, obviously, we're trying to promote the arts for lots of different reasons, not just to improve quality of life, but it's also very important economically for economic development, and especially in these times. And we've got a very large arts community in downtown Bloomington, and it's not just our downtown, but throughout our community. I'm very happy that we made this step forward.
What sort of people would you appoint to a commission like this?
Well, that's actually a really good question. I've thought about it a little bit, talked to some of the council members, and I need to do that even more before I finally make the appointments. But I think what we're talking about are people who have been involved, who are artists themselves, or who have ties to art and the extent to which art and culture have enriched our community and the extent to which it's helped keep teenagers and others occupied summers and other times and enriching their lives. That's a really good question, and I think it's really an open one right now.
There was some discussion Monday about funding for public art. Whose responsibility is it to fund this type of thing? Is that something that needs to even be sorted out right now? I would think that could be something that you would just sort of tackle project by project, one at a time, as these things developed.
I mean, whether or not we throw a couple of crumbs or a few loaves to the arts community is part of the budget process, like it is with anything else. We know that this is important for our community. We know that there's support behind it. We don't have to decide on specific levels of funding. We'll do that as it happens.
That's Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner speaking with Ryan Denham. The mayors of Bloomington and Normal join us most weeks after regular and special council meetings. Next week, hear from Normal Mayor Chris Coos. This is Sound Ideas on Bloomington Normal's Public Media, 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're all under stress after months of dealing with COVID-19 and other troubles. In this conversation with Tim Shelley, Unity Place Therapy Supervisor Cody Maddox says that's to be expected. Maddox says there are also ways to alleviate those tensions.
We are all feeling some COVID fatigue, whether it's quarantining, staying at home, wearing masks, social distancing. We've been doing this for months now, and like you said, no end in sight right now. Being on alert for that long of a time period definitely comes with its stress, and it takes a toll. And whether it's with following those health guidelines or maybe worrying about the possibility of contracting the virus or having a loved one who may test positive or be at risk due to other health conditions, that worry, that concern, the alarm is definitely going to cause fatigue over time.
What's the fatigue feel like? How does it impact people? And what can I do potentially to stave it off or deal with it?
I think people will find it'll impact them in different ways, very much like stress. I think many have experienced prolonged periods of stress in their life before, hopefully not as long as this pandemic has been. Fatigue as in tiredness, literal fatigue would definitely be a common part of COVID fatigue. Could be increased anxiety, perhaps irritability. Over time, chronic stress might impact how we are interacting with others and might rise in anger. Like I said, irritability that might impact relationships, difficulty sleeping. Could all be part of this fatigue that we're experiencing.
but a lot of people are having a hard time. How do I begin to deal with those interpersonal connections that might become frayed by the overall stress and tension right now?
I think we're all seeing that in people we know, and like we know, it's not just COVID right now. There's natural disasters. There's protests and a lot of strong feelings about everything that's going on. And one thing that I think can be helpful is taking a step back and reminding ourselves this has been a stressful time for all of us, and sometimes in different ways. But if we are noticing that we're feeling more irritable, and maybe someone we're talking to, we're noticing that they just aren't quite themselves, or this is a more angry conversation than was intended, taking that step back and saying, well, this has been a very stressful year. It's possible that, you know, this irritability or anger that we're seeing is an expression of just all of the stress, and being compassionate to each other. It's okay to feel irritable. That's part of this fatigue, this stress, and it gets the better of us all sometimes. And being able to step back and acknowledge that can be very helpful.
Unity Place community-based therapy supervisor Cody Maddox spoke with Tim Shelley. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Illinois Wesleyan University wants to remove the stigma that can come with mental health issues in athletics. Women's lacrosse coach Lindsay Keller is leading a new mental wellness initiative in IWU athletics. She tells Eric Stock she sees the struggles many student athletes face.
Psychology in people, along with athletics, has always been really important to me. And just my experience with student athletes in the past, too, and in my interactions with student athletes and the struggles that they go through, knowing that it's something that's very, very common, regardless of what team you are on, there is a lot of that goes into being a student athlete.
If we could expand on that a little bit, as a psychology teacher and a coach, it's an interesting intersection. The mindset that exists in sports is you have to show mental toughness. You have to fight through adversity. That's what separates champions from everyone else. So how do you, with your background, approach that mindset, and does that contribute to where we're at today?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, I just think about when I played, you know, years and years ago, mental health wasn't a conversation. A lot of times there was that stigma of like, well, if you're struggling, then it must not mean that you're mentally tough enough. And there is still a good amount of bias about knowing the difference between mental health and mental toughness. Someone who struggles with mental health can still be mentally tough and still learn mental toughness strategies on the field. And I think that that's where there's probably an unclear line for people of knowing what that difference is. People with mental health can still be pushed, with mental health struggles can still be pushed. They can still overcome things. They just may have this extra obstacle that they've also got to work on in order to overcome those things. So it's very interesting to try, you know, we're in a position right now where we're trying to reduce that stigma of knowing that, you know, mental health does not mean that you're weak. Mental health doesn't mean that you aren't able to do something. Mental health means maybe even so you're more mentally tough because you do have the ability to overcome something else on top of the adversity you may hit in a game.
And do you sense that student athletes want to seek this kind of help, but wonder if they will get labeled, if, you know, even if it's not their coach, but someone else they tell, it's a small athletic department, people talk, they're afraid that, you know, this may become an excuse to play someone else instead. So how do you overcome that stigma and to get them willing to come forward?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that question. The first one is you asked, you know, does this seem like something student athletes want and need? And the overwhelming majority is yes, student athletes want this. Our SAC, our Student Athlete Advisory Committee, has brought it up as something that they really want to focus on for student athletes as well. We're going to be putting out a survey to see just how important it is to, you know, what percentage of students are really looking for these resources and activities, what are they looking for? And then that second part, that stigma piece you talk about, also very important. What we kind of designed to help with that piece is if a student athlete does not feel comfortable approaching their coach specifically for whatever reason, like the ones you stated, like they're afraid that they're not going to be able to play, or their coach may, you know, not think that they're mentally tough. For any of those reasons, we've actually started what's called a care team here in the athletics department. And there's a variety, you know, a diverse amount of coaches and administrators, athletic trainers that make up the CARE team. Student athletes or even teammates who are concerned about one of their teammates' mental health, they can go to any of these particular coaches or, like I said, administrators or trainers, and they can approach those people and say, hey, I'm looking for some advice or I'm looking for some resources. And that's a completely confidential team.
And this all was in the works pre-pandemic, but how has COVID and the fact that the student athletes don't have that outlet impact your approach?
There was a large number of student athletes who were struggling with mental health pre-pandemic. Now I can, you know, safely say probably 100% of the student athletes are struggling with that, including coaching, including anyone on campus, anyone in the community, right?
That is Illinois Wesleyan's women's lacrosse coach, Lindsay Keller, with Eric Stock. The athletic department plans to offer resources for student athletes, including guest speakers and webinars on mental wellness. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.